Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
This is Philippe Saint-Just. I'm co-founder and SVP of product at Reef Technology, based in Miami.
Philip, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Excited to talk to a fellow entrepreneur here in South Florida. A lot's been going on in Miami tech scene, so I want to dive a little bit deeper on that with you. But before we do that, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
Sure. So, I almost don't remember having a career because I've been with Park Shaki or Reef for so long now. But I'm the co-founder of Reef, which we started in 2013. At the time, the company name was Park Shaki, and Reef is essentially an urban infrastructure company focusing on repurposing mostly parking infrastructure into what we call neighborhood hubs to deliver goods and services that are locally curated into neighborhoods. So originally I was the CTO of Reef, and now I'm heading our product organization. And previous to that, I held a product and engineering related positions at Citibank. I did enterprise software for a large number of multinationals on the B2B side.
Well, that's pretty exciting, and thanks for, you know, seems like a very diverse background. And as far as, you know, you've mentioned Reef Technologies was a Park Shaki, I believe you mentioned, was the previous name. Just as a fellow startup founder of multiple companies, you know, I had successfully failed a lot of them, had success with some of them, and I understand the importance of pivoting. And in the startup world, that happens probably on a daily basis. Tell us a little bit more about where you guys had originally started versus where you at right now.
Sure. So we certainly have come a long way. When we started our the company at the core of Reef, so Park Shaki, we were focused on being a reservation platform for parking spaces. So you can think of it like an Orbitz for parking. If you go to an event like the Miami Heat, so that you wouldn't have to worry about where to park, you'd go on our platform, reserve a space, and then they'd be there waiting for you when you got there. And that worked for a while until one day we did really well, sold out a whole parking lot for, I think it was the Phil Collins concert at American Airlines Arena, and super excited, super pumped. And then the night of the event, the guy who owned the parking lot was like, "No way am I giving you my parking lot when I know I can sell everything to people who drive up for twice the price." And so that kind of, you know, woke us up to realizing that that actually it's pretty tough being a broker and a middleman, especially if the power dynamics are not with you. And the key thing to know about parking is it's all about proximity. The value of what you pay for parking is based on how far you are from where the person really wants to go. Because nobody's going to a parking lot for fun. They're going there to leave their car to go somewhere else. And so it's really obvious when you go to events. Miami Airlines or American Airlines Arena. Well, back then it was American Airlines Arena. The Miami Heat Arena. If you park right in front of it, it's $50 for your car. If you walk down one block, it's $20. You walk down two blocks, it's $10. And then three blocks and more, it's like $5. And so, you know, within the span of literally four blocks, you have 10x'd the value of that real estate based on how close you are to where people really want to go. And so I think that really kind of forms the core of what Reef is today, and what we built on top of it. So going back to your question about pivoting, basically, that was a key moment when really we understood that that what we had to do was control the supply, and especially control supply of proximity. So we did this mental shift of pivoting from being a parking company to being a proximity company at that point.
Wow, very interesting. And I could imagine, you know, if you're not built, or if you're not used to that type of environment with things shifting probably on an hourly basis, and being able to, you know, successfully change that focus and trajectory versus where you were working on previously, it's a very dynamic environment. So as far as the overall solution of Reef Technology when it comes to parking solutions, how did that all come about? Well, was that a personal need that you had encountered as you were going through the parking situations in South Florida? Give us a little bit of a context there.
Good question. So I don't actually have a car, so which is ironic for someone who leads a parking company. I think it was more driven by, I mean, our vision is more driven by a view of how cities should operate, and by looking how they operate today. And so really, you know, Reef and Parkshockey kind of grew up in the context of on-demand delivery, in the context of ride sharing. And so we've seen what those elements have done to cities. They basically clogged them up. They've introduced a class of workers that are somewhat empowered, but at the same time the economics don't really work for pure ride sharing and pure point to point delivery. And our background, or I mean the background of one of my co-founders, is in logistics, and so he was able to apply a lot of what the logistics industry has learned over the past 100 years to basically this new environment of urban mobility. And one of the key principles I think we picked up on is that point-to-point networks just don't scale, which is essentially what the ride-sharing companies were built on. And what you need is really a hub-and-spoke network where you put the hub in the right place, and you understand that the spokes need to kind of go back and forth from either a fixed starting point or a fixed endpoint in order to be able to build a network that actually has proper unit economics. And so based on kind of that realization, that's when we started looking at our own assets and our own set of parking lots, and really started thinking about them as the hubs in that hub and spoke network, and trying to figure out what we could do with them, and what we could build on top of them.
Right. No, that's very, very interesting background on how that the actual solution came about. When it comes to, so you guys have been building this, growing since 2013, I believe you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, probably not the right term to call you guys a startup still, but I would imagine that you're still trying to maintain that type of environment and culture of innovation at the end of the day. So tell us a little bit more about, you know, the current culture of Reef, and what are some of the strategies and practical recommendations that you can share when it comes to building and fostering that culture of innovation within the organization?
Sure. So we have a very unorthodox path, I think, for a high growth company. I'm just kind of summarizing how we expanded. We were, I think, closer to what you call a startup up until 2018. I think we had around 100 employees, and we're working on a certain trajectory, and had the opportunity to prove out all the elements of our current business model, but at a small scale, or at a lower scale. So we prove out our concept relative to kitchens, our concept relative to proximity hubs, our concept relative to last mile delivery. And what we're able to do is essentially partner with SoftBank, a company that is that has a same high growth mindset, high big picture mindset, And essentially, we raised funds from them that allowed us to acquire two existing parking companies that were in the US and Canada. And so overnight, we went from essentially 100% business to a 15,100% business. And so very different than I think the way most companies grow. And so for us, it was, this is still an ongoing process, but we were both defining, building, conserving, and transforming the culture all at the same time, depending on which areas of the business that we were looking at. And I think fundamentally what it came to was really being able to be crisp around a vision and being able to be crisp around values in order for us to be able to talk about them openly. Without having that clear North Star, it's very hard to really build a culture and maintain a culture. And so one of the things that we value extremely at Reef is transparency and is being to talk, being able to talk openly about really anything. And that was one of the key aspects of being able to get people on board and keep people on board relative to what we're trying to achieve here.
You know, those are very interesting perspective, and thank you for sharing that. When it comes to, so you guys are in a very unique space when it comes to parking technologies and, you know, the overall niche from that standpoint, what are other trends or ideas that really excite you these days? What are you researching? What is the next big thing in Phillipsburg?
Well, so the thing that I love about our business is that it really is a proximity platform, and it's really about bringing goods and services closer to consumers and allowing neighborhoods to really thrive with diversity. So almost by definition, our company is based on the idea of an ecosystem and based on the idea of finding new and interesting things and finding concepts that are relevant to people in neighborhoods. So there's constantly an influx of ideas. We have a great BD team that is always finding new ways of commercializing our proximity and finding partners for our proximity solution. So just recently, for example, we signed a deal with Joby Aviation. Joby is an eVTOL company that is rethinking essentially how we move people around cities. So they've got what essentially looks like one of those little drones that you see people flying, except it's 100 times bigger and it can carry 2 to 4 people. So it's really like a next generation helicopter, but much more efficient, much quieter. There's a whole science around how you can reduce the noise of buffeting helicopter motors, which is really interesting. And so we're partnering with them essentially to open up our proximity network for their needs and bring vertical transportation modes to the cities that essentially bypass a lot of the congestion that traditional cities might have, especially in an area like Miami and Miami Beach, where you have, you know, 3 bridges if you want to go from one to the other. And so those tend to crowd up very, very quickly.
Right. No, those are definitely interesting trends. Very niche. Meant to ask, how big is Reef Technologies now as far as headcount?
We've got 15,000 employees and about 4,500 locations in the US, Canada, and then we've got some operations in Europe.
So share your thoughts on kind of the overall concept of future of work, because as I spend a lot of time talking to other executives, founders, investors, and so forth, one prevalent topic, especially lately, has been the company's needs and ability to scale up or down in a very efficient, fast, and nimble way. So the, you know, the gig workers, the contractors, the overall contingent workforce has been on a tremendous rise, especially in the last couple of years, as we've seen. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Talk to us a little bit about the, you know, the future of work.
Sure. So we've got a huge contingent, I mean, a huge contingency of field workers to operate our parking garages and parking lots, to operate our kitchens, to do last mile delivery, to operate our retail stores. So we deal a lot in that area as well. On our side, we've made a decision to bring this workforce in-house and bring them on as employees. That was very important for us, because what we are fostering at Reef is really a culture of ownership, and it's very hard to do that if you just have a transactional relationship with people. And so for us, being a company that focuses on proximity, it's all about decentralization and about being in the neighborhoods. And so we need people that are engaged. We need people that have a sense of ownership. Like, this is my neighborhood. I work for Reef, but this is my neighborhood. And so for us, employees was the answer. It might not be the solution for everyone, but it's very important for us to do that.
Right. Absolutely. I can definitely relate on so many levels from that standpoint. So as we talk about, you know, the differentiation factors and competitive advantage for you as the founder, you know, as an executive, I'm pretty sure surrounding yourself with the best people, with the like-minded professionals, is at the top of your mind 24/7, whether you're actively recruiting or not. Personally, me, whenever I talk to anybody, it's always that question in the back of my mind: is this someone I would want to work with? So I'm pretty sure, to a certain extent, you operate in a similar capacity. Share with us any thoughts or strategies that really help you from a standpoint of winning that war for talent out there, because the war for talent is real out there. It's a candidate-driven market. A lot of companies thought that going virtual is really going to help get access to candidates worldwide on a global scale, but also competition 10x as well, right? So anything that helps you and your organization attract the top talent, share with us any strategies there.
Sure. Well, you know, I think it's important to understand that you're never going to please anyone. And so there's not a one size fits all. Not everyone who's talented will be a good fit for your organization. So really understanding, I think, what your culture is and what values you want to bring in is you need to start there. Given that, there is plenty of talent out there, and a lot of people that are looking for inspiration, that are looking for vision, that want to be part of something greater. And so what we sell at Reef is really the future and the opportunity to work for something special, something that's going to change the world. We've been able to attract good talent that way. But at the same time, you know, I have plenty of interviews where I talk to people, and it's just, it's not going to be a good fit for the company. They're not necessarily looking for what we're offering. So some people, have an opportunity to earn a lot more and are looking for that high paycheck. And sometimes it's not, that's not what we can offer or want to offer. At least for the core of the company, you really can't build it on mercenaries. You have to build it on people who buy into the vision and who essentially bring themselves, and inject themselves into what you're trying to build.
Right. Very. No, absolutely. As an active angel investor in technology startups myself, one of the evaluation criteria, which I think is super important when it comes to, you know, looking at founders, is that ability to recruit. Really, yep. The ability, because it's extremely challenging. It's as difficult as building the actual product as the actual company. So a lot of the things that you're talking about definitely make sense. So to take that a little bit further, as you attract the top talent, retention is also another very complex layer when we talk about, you know, retaining the top talent, because the same companies continuously look for, you know, the top performers at every organization. So I'm sure the top performers at your company are continuously poached, continuously presented with unique opportunities to, you know, to join the other projects and so forth. Tell us a little bit about the strategies when it comes to retention. How do you build that environment? What really helps you? What have you learned in the past?
Sure. So, you know, we use some, you know, we use some traditional methods and some untraditional methods of keeping people excited and motivated. Equity obviously is very important. And having people really buy into the company and get rewarded for being part of that, being part of what you're building. But I think we try to structure the overall organization so that we are we're providing opportunities within the company to grow. We're providing opportunities to learn. And one of the good things about being a high growth company is that you're usually creating new positions pretty regularly, and so there's an opportunity to move up for everyone if they're able to perform. So that's something that we emphasize. That's a culture that we try to build, and we try to give opportunities so that people can prove themselves, so they can show what they can do. And not feel like what happens in the enterprise world, like they have to go elsewhere in order to get promoted. And that's kind of that was my career. I know that was a career for a lot of my peers. It's very easy to get a higher position somewhere else usually than within your own company. So we are very cognizant of that and try to make sure that both the culture as well as our reward system, our performance system, is built around the idea of meritocracy and around the idea of rewarding people pretty much immediately for what they're able to accomplish. So there's a very clear path and a very clear alignment of goals.
Yeah, those are very, you know, very distinct strategies. Seem so simple, but oftentimes overlooked when it comes to, you know, retaining your top talent, which a lot of that could be prevented ahead of time. So the last question on talent retention acquisition from that standpoint. Interviewing is another very complex component that is a combination of art and the science. And, you know, I have never seen, you know, it's a continuous learning journey, I guess, when it comes to interviewing. Mm-hmm. From your standpoint, when it comes to interviewing the candidates, obviously at the executive level, they go through multiple rounds of interviews, technical assessments, or whatever the case may be. When they get to you, give us a glimpse into an interview with Philip. What does that look like? Do you tend to keep it pretty traditional, or do you get very creative? But more importantly, what do you look for in responses when you talk to candidates?
So I think by the time I talk to people, what I'm usually checking for is really values, core values. And it's hard, and you can't really ask those questions, right? Do you believe in being true? Do you believe in showing grit? I mean, you'll get the answer you want there, but you're not going to get you're not going to get the real feeling for how that person thinks and how they feel. And so, I usually keep my interviews a little more informal. And I look for stories. I want to hear people talk about themselves and talk about how they have approached their challenges, their opportunities, and then I usually, you know, try to figure out whether they're really telling their story or they're telling their company story or somebody else's story. And so usually, you know, you ask why or how, let's say three times. And after that, you can pretty much tell whether that's really coming from them or they're just, you know, or they're kind of telling the story of their team, or maybe the people they work with, rather than their own experiences.
Right, right, right. Absolutely. No, one of my favorite books is by Ben Horowitz, "The Hard Thing About the Hard Things," and one thing that he talks in it about, you know, the interviewing strategies, and something that I still, you know, try to remember every time I interview is, you know, hiring for strength versus lack of weakness, because we've all been there in the trap where when you interview and you think from a standpoint of, you know, is this the weakness that I can tolerate, or is this someone that I can tolerate as far as working with? So it's an ongoing journey. It's just, you know, the concept that I try to remember when interviewing. So thanks for sharing some of those strategies. Makes perfect sense. Last but not least, when it comes to your sources for self-actualization, for staying ahead of the curve, for learning opportunities, what is your content diet is looking like these days with so much information being thrown at us on a daily basis? How do you stay selective? What are the things that really help you?
Sure. So I love content that is pretty much irrelevant to my business. So I like to, I'm a pretty big nerd, so I like to listen to science podcasts. I like to read current affairs. I think there's a lot of learning that you can do from just looking at people's behaviors and understanding people's processes in areas other than yours. Because sometimes when you look at what competition is doing, you're biasing it for your experience, or you're discounting what they're doing based on your understanding of your strengths and weaknesses. Whereas I think if you're looking for unrelated, if you're learning about unrelated topics, it's much easier to pick up patterns, pick up trends, pick up approaches, pick up strategies that end up being relevant to you, but without the baggage of your current day-to-day context. So that's what I like to do. So I'll plug in specifically Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. I love that love that podcast, and then I'm a big fan of Quora and LinkedIn.
Oh, definitely makes sense. And thanks for some of those recommendations for our listeners. We'll make those available in show notes. And what are you currently reading as far as the book, and which book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
I don't read that much anymore books. Probably like most people, I've bite-sized my intake of knowledge.
So hard to find a book that you would actually finish these days. Like, out of all the books I've read, I don't know, 9 out of 10, I haven't gone past the half.
I'd agree with that. So I'll take a pass on that question.
it's all good. Philip, can't thank you enough for your time today. Very insightful conversation. Personally learned quite a bit. What I like to do with a lot of guests is to do another follow-up conversation in about a year and see how much of change transpired. And we will revisit the conversation from a year ago and basically take a listen to, you know, what we've discussed. And so I'm definitely looking forward to that.
All right. I look forward to it too, John.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.